Welcome to Conversations in Cannabis. Today's episode features Tim and Taylor Blake, the father and daughter team behind legendary Northern California cannabis event, the Emerald Cup. This episode was recorded over the phone on November 30th, 2021.
Well, I really appreciate you guys taking the time to talk to me this morning. I know you guys are absolutely slammed, especially considering it's the first return of the in-person Emerald Cup since the craziness of the world. So how's things been going for you guys?
You know, it's been a very mixed bag. You know, honestly, Taylor knows that I you know, kind of worry about that word, but we didn't find out till late that we couldn't sell to 18 to 21 year olds because of an oversight with the new regs. That was kind of crazy. And the hotel we're working with is really gone from being a cannabis friendly hotel to where they're like totally anti-cannabis overnight. And you know, there's just up and downs with like with any event. It's always a challenge. But the good thing is it looks like we're going to have great weather for the weekend of the Cup. And for us, we're probably the only show in the country that goes ahead and does shows outside in the rain in December when you can be, you know, wiped out.
Yeah, I remember talking with you back in May about what had happened the last time that you guys had the in-person Emerald Cup. And I had mentioned that, you know, it was kind of an emotional moment to see a trade show or a consumer show or any event really take the time to put out umbrellas for people that didn't have their own umbrellas. So if they're, you know, they're obviously going to stay dry throughout the event. And I really thought that kind of, you know, neat, small touch in small detail really is what the Emerald Cup is all about. You know, just really connecting with people and really, you know, bringing the community together, no matter what the circumstance.
We do our best. It's, you know, it's our ethos is not to worry about making money really, but to put on the best show possible for our attendees and our sponsors and you know, vendors and contestants. And so we go out of our way. It's a lot easier this year on both of us because we're not doing the contest in December. It's going to come in the spring. So normally we're frantically working to finalize the contest details and the winners and whatnot, the final judges meetings. And then we go straight to the Cup like the next morning. And, you know, it's been like weeks of harried, you know, running around with the judges meetings, but we don't have that this year. So I don't know about you, Taylor, but I feel relaxed about that we're not, you know, looking at that issue.
Yeah, I'm definitely, this is uncharted territory for us. Like Tim said, where we are usually really focused on the contest and making sure that all the winners are selected usually at this time. So to not be doing that, we actually have historically spent Thanksgiving together as a family, like working. That's what this was, not as a family. The quotations was not the family. I meant like this was for the working like Thanksgiving that we've always like had. And it's like, it was very nice this Thanksgiving. We didn't really actually even talk about work, or we tried not to. So that was a nice change. But yeah, we're really excited about the contest. I think the new timeline for it is actually much better.
Well, and aside from not having the actual contest during the fall harvest, what else can people kind of expect as kind of a shift from the traditional annual Santa Rosa event that you guys have?
Well, we're concentrating on what people really like and why they come to the Cup. And in addition to the contest, which is they come for the annual gathering of the tribe, getting together with all their friends and seeing, you know, what the latest genetics are, what the latest flowers are going on, you know, the celebration of the fall harvest. The market for the vendors and consumers is still a big aspect of our event. People coming in and getting direct access to consumers and to our vendors and our, you know, get the stories from our brands. So that's still going to be there. And we've really gone out of our way to really highlight the party aspect of it, which has always been there. But, you know, the real musical aspect, we got the speaker stages coming in with the panels. That's great. But really highlighting and finding really cool cutting edge music for our attendees and everybody to really have fun with. So I'm happy about this lineup. I'm more excited about it than ever before.
Is there any one act in particular that you're super excited about? I know that you've made several announcements across the past couple of weeks with new people being added to the lineup. What's your favorite so far that you guys have made an announcement for?
I've got two off the top. Well, I've got Hyrie. She's a female act that we had perform in 2016, actually, and she hasn't been performing at the Emerald Cup since then, and I saw her and she was amazing. And then Big Wild, I saw perform at Northern Nights, and I wasn't very familiar with his music, and then saw him at Northern Nights, and it was like everybody in the crowd was dancing. Like there wasn't like one person, even I'm not a dancer, and I was even dancing. So when we were talking about music acts and really making sure that the Harvest Ball felt like a party, Big Wild was definitely a name that everybody was throwing around. So we were just super excited that we actually got to sign them.
Well, and the Emerald Cup absolutely is a party. I mean, you guys do it unlike anybody else in the industry by far. I mean, I remember talking with you, Tim, again back in May about the blower that had a pound of weed in the back of it, and I ended up on the LA LA Times front page over that because I got blasted in the face by that blower. What is the favorite part of the Emerald Cup experience to you guys?
I don't know if my favorite experience is the always blower been... guy. Go ahead. Tim. No, go ahead. I was just
that leaf blower that guy got a lot of press and a lot of mileage. I'll tell you what, they still talk about him.
Yeah, it was an absolutely insane. I mean, like every single time I see that crop up on Facebook or somebody reshare that photo, I'm like, oh my god. I still have memories. PTSD yeah. Flashbacks, as it were.
To me, it's always been about the contest and seeing the winners up there on that stage and, you know, the wonderful celebration of everybody coming together in a friendly competition. You know, we have 40 contests, almost 200 awards. It's just, you know, to see that after all the work that goes into it to put on a really fair, integrity-based, competition, that culmination is really cool. And then of course, you know, just getting the show done on Sunday and being able to just cut loose after the award ceremony and party and just not have to worry about the interviews anymore or the scenes and all that part of it. And just being able, okay, now I can get high and not worry about, you know, saying goofy things and just cut loose. And so that's a lot of fun, just being with the whole community and crowd and just partying.
And Taylor, for you, like, you know, having grown up in the Emerald Cup, obviously, you know, you've had an entire litany of experiences throughout your life with this experiential event. Do you have one in particular memory that kind of stands out from them all?
I think the memory that I think is like the most special in a certain way was that seeing the progression of the cup from when it was just at Tim's property at Area 101. And it was very, very close knit. And even then I thought that was like, so I was so surprised at how many people would show up and it would be, you know, just this like community element. But when we moved to Redway for the first time and that turnout was, I thought, really large. When we moved to Santa Rosa in Sonoma County in 2013, I was like, you know, walking around the crowds and there were people that we didn't know there personally. And I remember just Tim and I talking about that and being like, people bought tickets, people we don't know are here. And that was like, I just think about how innocent and special that moment was because, you know, when you shoot big, you don't know how the turnout's going to be. And with an event in particular, to have people come out that we didn't know, that just, that meant so much to me. And so now seeing it with the way that the Emerald Cup has grown and just expanded over the years, it just, I think that staying into that humble place of just always being so grateful is really like really special to me. And so that's my favorite memory, I think, even still now.
Well, and I think that, you know, the reason why, you know, the Emerald Cup has grown the way that it has, and I think the reason why people come together the way that it has is, again, the culture behind the Emerald Cup is true culture of the California cannabis industry. You guys are absolutely the embodiment of California's cannabis scene, especially the Northern California cannabis scene. Tim, you know, when you're looking at kind of the progression of, you know, the event in and of itself and seeing, you know, what the impact that you guys have for the Northern California cannabis community, you know, does it give you kind of like a sense of pride knowing what you do for all these small farmers in the Northern California area?
Yeah, it does. You know what, when people come up to me and give me the accolades and tell me what it's meant to them, whether it's an attendee or a contestant or what the show has meant to them, it does. There's a sense of pride. It's humbling to think back on 18 years and to realize what we grew this from, having the guts to go out and do it in the very beginning and then learning on the fly and growing it to the size of Santa Rosa, that 2016 event before legalization with 1,200 entries and that huge crowd. it really is. And, you know, the thought of where we're going, taking it to LA and making it a national show and a national competition, a worldwide competition eventually, to see where we're attempting and where we're planning on going is, it's just a whole nother universe as to where we'll be in 5 and 10 years from now. So yeah, it's been quite a ride.
Well, and you guys are moving into Southern California in March. You know, we had talked about that the last time that you were on, and I know that you do have aspirations to make this a global event, but, you know, knowing that everybody from around the globe does come to, you know, the Emerald Cup already in Santa Rosa. I mean, I've seen, you know, Toby and Patrick from Futurola, all the Amsterdam crew, the people from, you know, what do you call it? Greenhouse Seeds coming in, and everybody. Like, when you think about the community as a whole, and again, what you've done for that community, it's mind blowing to me. And I got to ask, you know, seeing kind of the evolution across the past 18 years in the Northern California cannabis community, especially since legalization, obviously there's been a massive shift. Now there's a lot more regulations that you have to deal with. Being kind of that vocal part of the community, what are you hearing from the Northern California farmers as far as, you know, kind of how legalization has gone so far, especially now with, I believe, taxes going up January 1 again? You know, what are some things that you are hearing? And as kind of a follow-up to that, what are some things that people around California can do to both help, you know, the Northern California cannabis community and the California cannabis community as a whole?
Well, we started hearing months ago, an early part of the year, that it was going to be a true extinction event and a wiping out of the small farmers this year. Prop 64 came in, Jerry Brown, Gavin Newsom opened up large scale farming. You weren't supposed to have more than an acre for 5 years. Within that first year, you had 10, 20, 30 acre farms. And it's basically collapsed the markets for everybody at every end of the scale. So you're hearing up to 75 to 90% of the small farmers in Northern California not making it, and around California not making it over the next 12 months. But not only the small farmers, you're looking at, you know, I was on a call with a lot of the large companies, the retailers, the manufacturers, distribution companies, and the brands, and they're not making it either. The excessive taxes and regulation in this state have decimated every aspect of this industry. And although I'm happy 64 went by and got passed, because we're not seeing people go to prison anymore and mainstream people are embracing cannabis, the effects of what that's done to our industry has just crushed us. And who would have ever thought a small conservative redneck state like Oklahoma would come in and open it up and not have any of those regulations, not have any of that track and trace, not have any of those issues, and just be blowing us out of the water. And it's mind-boggling to see that. So as happy as I'm 64 went through, it's really sad to see what's happening to our community. What do you think, Taylor?
Yeah, I think that supporting legacy brands and legacy operators is definitely a really important thing. And we're trying to bring and highlight that issue at the Harvest Ball this year. We have a small farmer area that we've curated with the help of some key people in the industry, Michael Katz, Janine Coleman, Nick Smigley, Chris Anderson, Tracy Peller, and Tim and myself, and Gina from our team. And we really knew that going into Harvest Ball, we needed to put a highlight and a spotlight onto small farmers and the plight of the small farmer in the cannabis industry in California right now. So we offered through raffle 27 spaces for small farmers to come in and be able to vend directly to the consumers at the show. So if you are planning on attending the Harvest Ball, I would highly encourage anybody to check out this area and support small farmers. And that is definitely something that will be a really, really key part of the show, not only at Harvest Ball, but moving forward at every Emerald Cup.
And definitely the small farmers are the ones that are absolutely hit hardest by, you know, these regulations, and especially moving into the legal and licensed area. You know, here in California, you know, like you'd mentioned, Oklahoma, you know, vertical integration, if you got $7,500, you can basically become a vertically integrated business. Here in California, you know, you're talking about $1 million plus just to get a license. When you're looking at the industry here in California and the future of the industry, are you hopeful that maybe some of these regulations will be maybe tapered off a little bit, or that somebody, you know, might step up and say, hey, you know, you guys are really hitting the cannabis industry and the cannabis community really hard. And if, you know, you guys keep this up for another 10, 15 years, a lot of these legacy brands won't exist anymore.
Oh, no, you've got the Origins Council with Janine Coleman. We're going to be doing a rally at the Cup on this. They're coming out with a set of demands. There are some very large brands that have gotten together, and they're now having meetings. They're having a meeting right now about what their demands are going to be. So there's actually a couple of groups now trying to repeal Prop 64 and just get rid of the whole thing. So yeah, people are up in arms about it. The revolt is on. I don't know if it's really going to have enough of an impact in the short term to save a lot of those farmers, but I think federal legalization will come in and help. And one of the things that happened with 64 that people don't get a lot of knowledge about is that we used to have 12,000 dispensaries. Then we got down to under 1,000 dispensaries. So those dispensaries are holding on to a bottleneck of what goes into those stores and how people interact. And if you actually had 10,000 or more storefronts back in California, there'd be a lot more access, a lot more competition, a lot more ability for brands and small farmers to make it. So we really need to open up the retail. We need to get federal legalization. That'll really help. Then the Emerald Triangle and the California brands will do a lot better across the country and across the world. But we need to do that quickly. But I think in the short run, it's going to be a very challenging moment over the next 12 months for small companies and brands.
Yeah, and I still remember, being based here in Los Angeles, still remember, the post-interim control ordinance dispensaries, us having, just dispensaries everywhere and everybody, there was literally strains on strains. Everybody had their own niche products. Are you hopeful that we might get back to that kind of model in the future here in California?
We have to, or else we're not going to survive, because you just said it right there. Everybody had specific niches. Some people were indoors, some people were more concentrate, some people were medicinal, were pushing the sun grown. And so you have to have that diversity or else you just can't make it. And so without that, we're doomed. And I do think that people are waking up to that. It's part of politics. It's always about compromise. And 64 is a compromise for the cities and counties to have their own control. And when they did that, they were able to shut things down. And a lot of these, cities and counties did. But we really, like with alcohol, like with anything else, you need to have statewide policy. And that, that's the way it works. And you can't have these cities and counties choosing to shut down markets.
Well, you guys are now moving into my backyard with the law. I believe you guys are moving in Long Beach in the Southern California region for the March event. I have to ask, since it's going to be in my backyard, what can people expect from the new event that you guys are going to be throwing?
I'll give you the tough one, Taylor. You want to jump on that one?
Well, so we are still, we're still trying to finalize a few details around the Long Beach event. We are definitely having all intention of our plan is to go into Southern California in 2022. We are just finalizing the details of whether or not we'll be doing an award show first and then a physical event later on. So once we have all those details fleshed out, we will definitely be able to speak on them a little bit more. But one thing we know for sure is that we are going to be bringing the best of Northern California and Southern California, combining those two elements to the ML Cup that we bring to LA. It's something that we are so excited about, is bringing the winners of our contest on the biggest stage that we possibly could have them be on, which is in LA. Tim and I are actually, even though we are both live in Mendocino, we have very much enjoyed our trips to LA while we've been going through this process. And so it's something that we're really excited about, is coming to LA more, having these brands that are really known and really well loved up in Northern California to LA. So that being said, it is something that's asked very frequently of us, is when we are going to be expanding the Emerald Cup. So really excited to have that be taking place in 2022.
With COVID coming in, it's really challenging because people are still very restrictive, what you can do, what you can't do, how to open it up. So we've talked about Long Beach possibly taking until May or June for us to do the show there. So if that's the case, we would delay the award ceremony and do a consumer-driven show complete in May or June. So we're open to that. We're just kind of, letting it roll and see how it's going to go. We've talked to the Shrine, the Forum, different places about moving in there and doing shows. And so we're really dealing with a lot of different possibilities, and we're just waiting to see how it rolls out and what happens with COVID over the next month so we can really make that plan. But at the least, we'll definitely have the award ceremony down there no matter what. And we've got a couple of really incredible sites that we can do that at. And then we would do a nationwide, worldwide broadcast of that, if that's the direction we're going.
Well, I've definitely put in my judge's application. I know you put a call out for judges to be judges at the Emerald Cup. Being that you guys, you know, have seen so much cannabis coming out of California, obviously the best of the best. You know, Tim, I remember I'd asked you what your favorite of all time was last time we had talked. Taylor, I'm curious, you know, having seen all the litany of cannabis across your board, what has been your favorite cannabis experience at the Emerald Cup?
So let's see, my favorite cannabis experience. I do have a favorite like cultivator and cultivar. So it's this guy, Derek, that is a longtime contestant of ours. He's been entering since, I want to say 2007, but it could have even been sooner or earlier than that. But he grows this strain called In the Pines, and it's an osamine dominant strain, which is relatively rare. It's more common now, but it is, I'm not a huge stoner. And so when I find something that I like, I'm like, this is it for me. This is all I'm very like selective in what I like, but when I like it, I like love it. And so, he's this cultivator out of Boonville. So he's a personal use cultivator at this point. He didn't make it into the legal market. He entered last year. He hasn't won in a long time. He entered last year, and with his personal use entry, he won highest terpene content in the entire cup, nice. Which is a huge feat in itself, but it just goes to show like why his entries are so great. But because he hand waters everything, he puts so much love into it. And so still to this day is my favorite. And it's so funny. I feel like whenever I see him, he's like a celebrity to me, even though he's a very, he's a very humble grower, but he's a star in my heart.
Well, and that's the wonderful
17 award.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Excuse me, Nick. I think he's won 17 awards over the years. Derek has.
Jesus.
Top 10.
Yeah. I mean, and that's kind of the thing that we had talked about last time also, is that, you know, it's not all about, you know, the highest THC percentage. It's more about the totality of the cannabinoid makeup, the totality of the terpene profile. Are you guys really happy that you're seeing kind of this cultural shift as it relates to how cannabis is viewed and consumed? And it's not just, you know, the macro, it's more about really figuring out, you know, the micro parts of the endocannabinoid family and trying to figure out, you know, what the totality of the entourage effect is and trying to figure out what the best cannabis experience is for you.
Yeah, we're
very excited. The highest THC has never won the cup. It's always a combination of those cannabinoids. And to see that now really coming out and being talked about, we've divided the contest up into terpene profiles. We're going to be doing an almanac this year online. We're going to do a published version the following year, and we're going to really bring this information out. We've been on calls with Mark Lewis and Michael Baucus and Alec Dixon from SC Labs, Joey Sullivan out of Mercy Wellness, talking about how to divide this up. And to listen to Mark Lewis and Michael Baucus talk about these subcategories of terpenes and how to move them together and how to judge them has been a humbling experience for me. I've just been blown away by the expertise and knowledge of Mark Lewis and Michael Baucus and Alec Dixon. Don't you think, Taylor? It's been amazing to just listen to those guys and work with them.
Yeah, I think that the conversation is moving in the right direction. And I think if you look at it from a perspective of just even personal enjoyment, I think that the myth of the highest THC is the best is actually a disservice to the consumer in many ways, because I think that when you get into the science of what terpene profiles are and the different terpene profiles for different strains, I think that's definitely a much more elevated point in the conversation where people can truly find the strains that they love. And I think that it just makes the overall experience much more enjoyable.
When you're seeing, you know, consumers, you know, again, looking at the macro versus the micro, and you're seeing kind of like the drinks now from the Proposition 215 days having 1,000 milligrams to now being 2.5 milligrams. Are you guys hopeful that this is going to continue into the future?
Oh yeah, I think it is. I think people are really realizing, you know, I grew up as one of those guys that wanted to smoke heavy duty OG and just knock myself out. And as I got older, I realized I was knocking myself out, and I really became, you know, transformed with that. And to see like the canned drinks, we were at the celebration of the awards last year, and to see their 2.5 THC drink with the great terpene profile and be able to drink six or seven of those through the day and just like have a really wonderful experience. I realized after I'd gone through six or seven of them that I was having a great time. I was getting a nice little light buzz all the way through and getting great taste and the terpene profiles in there. And I loved it. So that's where we're going to go. It's about education. It's about educating people and really opening them up to the terpenolines or the osamines, or like you said, or the limonenes, and saying, okay, choose, look around and see something that really speaks to you and you get drawn to, and you're going to have a much better experience than just going out and get 32% THC and getting, you know, kind of paranoid and rocked. and so it's where we're going with the drinks, the edibles, everything is going to happen that way. And it's becoming more educated and much more inspirational, and it's better for all of us, you know?
Well, and definitely, oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, I think everybody has a bad edible story or a bad ingestible story. I mean, I think it's like before the science came in with the testing and standardized dosing for recommendations, I think that everybody had a bad experience. So I think now the way that the market is, where it's more approachable, I think having the lower dose beverages in particular or edibles, I think that it just makes it more approachable for the average consumer, because I think once you start to get into the new age of edibles and beverages where they are low dosage for a new person, I think then you're like, oh, these are great. And you can kind of build your tolerance over time, and it lends itself to a wider audience, I think, than the high dosage. Because even 1,000 milligram edible for me is intimidating, you know, and I love edibles. So I try to, you know, just go low and slow to begin and then get yourself into the higher dosages as your tolerance does.
Well, and consistency back during the 215 days was very hard too. I mean, you could have the totality of the potency on one side of the brownie and then nothing on the other side of the brownie. You know, nowadays, obviously you have, you know, full consistency, actualized dosages. And you had mentioned Can, an excellent company, people like Jem and Jane, you know, or if you want to go a little bit higher dosage, people like Hi-Fi Hops with Absolute Extracts. So like there, you know, I absolutely agree with you. I definitely like being able to sip a drink similar to how you would say a beer or something like that versus, you know, doing shots of 1,000 milligram soda. So yeah, we have the Emerald Cup coming up next week. What do you guys got going on the pipeline, getting ready for the big event?
We're starting to get excited. Right now it was a lot of planning, and we're returning in 2 years since we've been in Santa Rosa. So I think that all the planning has, you know, been underway for quite some time now. And Tim and I were just talking about it yesterday, realizing that it's next weekend. And we were like, we're getting excited. You know, there's definitely so many fun things in place that it's going to be a great time. So I think just the excitement is definitely starting to brew in our little camp.
We got the couple stages of the music and the speaker stages. We have things going on all over with the Regen area, with Area 101's lounge. We're bringing a lot of psychedelics. We have two panels, but then we invited all the mycologists and psychedelic people in to hang out at the Area 101 lounge and meet with us and talk. That's really being integrated into the show too. So like Taylor said, after 2 years of not seeing everybody at this size, it's going to be very, very exciting. And we got good ticket sales, good weather. People are coming in. They're really excited also to connect with everybody. So the party's going to be great.
I mean, I'm personally super excited. I mean, I booked my Airbnb a couple of weeks ago, just, you know, and I keep checking every single day how far away we are. So it's going to be great to see you guys back in person. Finally, have to get a session in with you guys. Been talking with Tim and Taylor Blake, the father and daughter team behind the Emerald Cup, Emerald Cup returning with the Harvest Ball to the Sonoma County Fairgrounds in Santa Rosa, California, this December 11th and 12th. Make sure to get tickets now at theemeraldcup.com. Again, Tim, Taylor, really great to see you guys, even virtually. Can't wait to see you guys in person next weekend.
Yay, yes. Thank you
we'll
so
have
much.
Some fun. I look forward to it. Thanks again, Nick.
Likewise. Thank you guys.
We would like to thank both Tim and Taylor for their time and being on today's episode. You can find out more about the Emerald Cup by visiting them online at www.theemeraldcup.com. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll see you here on the next episode of Conversations in Cannabis.